Hello and welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile Podcast. Today, as I'm sure you can hear, we are in central London, linking up with a man who's just walked straight off the air. He's got an energy for life and a passion for music, known best in broadcast for his work across TV and radio, formerly hosting Kiss Breakfast and now on our airwaves of Radio 1. Melvin O'Doon, welcome to the Monday Mile Podcast.
Yes, Ames. And why is it snowing? You brought the snow with you today.
Melvin, well, you know, you said you fancy going on a ski or snowboard holiday with me. I thought I'd just bring some snow to the podcast. I think I can safely say this is the first time we've ever podcasted in actual snow.
No way. Seriously.
What's going on?
I don't know. But listen, I'm going to have you to keep me warm because this is chili con carne today.
I think it needs to be the other way around. You have got woolly gloves on, a really nice red hat and a puffer jacket and about three layers.
Ames, I don't play with the cold, you know.
I've got none of the above going on.
Yeah, I mean, where are your layers? Like, what's going on? Aren't you cold right now?
Can I just snuggle next to you?
Yeah. What do you
think? For the whole thing. So Melvin, where are we?
So right now we're in central London, a place called Hallam Street, just around the corner from Radio 1. I've just come off the show with Ricky and Charles doing the live lounge. We do it Mondays to Thursdays. And this is kind of like, this area of London means quite a lot to me because a lot of my first jobs in media happened around here.
Okay, talk me through it.
So if you go down this road.
Should we go down that road?
We can go down this road.
Okay.
It's called Clipstone Street.
Okay.
And that's where Radio 1 used to be.
We are on the actual road.
Come out the road. That's where Radio 1 and 1Xtra used to be.
Okay.
Back in the day. And that was like my first radio job at 1Xtra as a broadcast assistant. So that's essentially like an assistant producer. So Ricky got me the job there. I was a freelancer for like about a year or so. And then we basically entered this competition and we got signed to an agency called Something Else. And they introduced us to Kiss, which was down that way.
Okay, down this way.
Yeah.
And is that near the big Top Shop?
So that is near, it's not too far from the old Top Shop. So that was in a place called Winsley Street. And there's a nightclub next to it now. Then they moved to Golden Square, which is like by the Sony building and all that. So like all of my radio jobs have kind of happened in this area. And even prior to that, I used to work for Top Shop.
No.
Yeah. I used to work
on
for
the
Top Shop.
On the tills or
I used to work for a concession.
No way.
Yeah, selling like, this is going to sound so mad. We used to sell phone covers.
Oh yeah. Were they any good?
I'm going to say yes in case the company's watching. They're probably bust now because no one changes the covers on their phone anymore. But yeah, they were just really tacky phone covers. And it was a time when, you're probably even too young to remember phone covers on your phone. Do you remember when you used to change the face on your phone? See?
I don't actually know what
you're saying. That's what I'm saying. You're like, what are you on about?
I've got a clear case on mine.
Back in the day, Ames, before all these iPhone business, people used to have Nokias.
Oh, yes.
And you could change the face.
Oh!
And it was so big that I worked for a company that sold accessories just to change your face. So we used to have like velvet ones.
Leopard print.
These different prints. And I just worked there. But because it was like quite a niche thing. And also, if you're going to Topshop, you don't want to buy a phone cover. I used to just kind of just chat to everyone and just relax. I used to love it.
Nice. So how did you fall into radio? Or did you fall into radio?
Yeah, I did, because initially I wanted to be an actor. I didn't do very well in my A-levels, and I think I kind of scared myself out of acting. My mum was just like, you have to go to university. And I kind of went through clearing to go to Luton, which is now called the University of Bedfordshire, and that's where I met Ricky. And to be honest, I would say Ricky got me into radio, because I met him, and we just got on so well, and we were doing a similar course, and I did a minor in radio, and he already knew radio, and I saw how passionate he was and how much he really enjoyed what he did, and we started doing like student radio together, and I was just like, this is really fun.
Right, so how long have you known Ricky?
Like over 20 years, since university.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
How important is that relationship with you, Ricky and Charlie, when it comes to going live?
I think that's the most important thing about what we do. I think that's why people tune into our show. It's because we're genuine mates, the same way you and Katya are like genuine mates, and people kind of like attracted to that. When you two post stuff together, like I'm already happy.
Oh.
Like even when I see like profile pictures of you like on your WhatsApp and stuff, it just makes me smile because I can see you guys have a genuine love for each other. And that's the same with me, Ricky and Charles. Like, I actually don't see them as my mates. I see them as family.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And so I think that's why people tune in, because they become part of our family for a few hours a day.
That's so mega. I've seen around a lot recently. There's a quote flying about that friends are the family you choose.
I like that. Yeah, I like that.
And to say that you work with your family, like your every day is going to the office with people you love. That is so special.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. And I just think sometimes, like, we take things for granted, because for a long time I've not really known it any other way until I do other jobs. Sometimes you do other jobs and you work with other people and you go, rah, you know what? Ricky and Charlie wouldn't have done it this way. Or just they would know that if I did this, then that they need to do that because of you. Yeah. You've always got each other's back. Do you know what I mean?
That's special. I think people can take friendship for granted and you don't realise. I'm very aware of how special it is, because I don't have any family like here where I live in London, in the UK.
Where's your family at?
All my family are in the UK, but nowhere near here. They're a flight away. In Northern Ireland. That was the worst accent ever. Can you do Northern Irish accent?
I can only do African accents. That's it. That's my full range.
Okay.
Although my second name sounds like it's Irish, O'Doom. Like, everyone thinks it's like,
Melvin O'Doom. We need to go across this way. We need to go a little bit faster because we're getting cold here. That was that Irish. That wasn't too bad.
That was better.
That was slightly better. Yeah, my family are in Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. So my mates here are my family.
I'm your family then, technically speaking.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're a new member of the family. We're just warming up.
Youngest member. No, that's beautiful. And I think, you know what? You're so right, because I've got mates who, like, when they were young, they had friends. And as they've gotten older and then they've kind of, like, got married and had kids, their friends have kind of drifted away. And I think it's quite hard to make friends when you're an adult. It feels a lot harder than when you was at school or university. That used to be like second nature.
I think because we grow so much as we get older, that's when like our values and morals become so apparent and so important when it comes to hanging out and meeting new people.
And you know who you want to surround yourself with. So I think we become more selective when we're older as well. So
that brings us on very nicely to dating.
Oh, right. Yeah. Go on.
Being selective with who we surround ourselves by. You did a podcast a few years back on dating and the struggles you've had. Why do you think you struggle, Melvin?
I just think dating in general is hard. I think it's hard for not just me. I think it's hard for everyone, which is why there are so many apps, which is why there's so many sites, because I just think it's a tough time to date. I was listening to someone else's podcast, Stephen Bartlett's, and he had this amazing woman on there. I think her name's Logan. She actually works for Hinge.
No way.
Yeah, and she's like a scientist. She studied science. And she kind of like looks at behavioral patterns and stuff when it comes to dating. And she said that our generation, we're not equipped to date in this way. Because it's a brand new way. Like,
digitally.
Yeah, our ancestors didn't go, right, let me get my phone and find my wife or
hang
husband.
Hang on a second.
Yeah, let me find my partner, my life partner.
The early hours.
That's not how things were done. So you can't contact your grandparents and say, well, how did you call grandma or grandpa and get their advice? Because this is a brand new thing.
Do you think it's the only way forward? Do you believe in the old-fashioned methods?
My view is just don't close yourself to anything. Like, I've got friends who go, I wouldn't go on a dating site. Like, I wouldn't touch it. And I'm like, well, why not? Because if I know people who have been on various sites and they found love. Like, my sister, she met her partner on, like, I think a site, like eHarmony or something like that.
No, wait, that's like old school now.
Yeah, but it's one of those, like, the application for that's like a job interview.
Is it?
Yeah, it's like detailed. You know, she met her partner and they married now.
Wow.
So for me, I just think whether it's meeting someone in real life, whether it's using Instagram, whether it's using Hinge, like, just don't shut yourself off, because your potential partner could be using it. Yeah, exactly.
Do you think having a public profile in the media, across TV and radio, makes it trickier? Because...
What do you think?
Because you even said to me when we walked in, I can't imagine you'd have any trouble on these apps and stuff.
I do find it hard to believe that you're single and even on an app.
Maybe I don't utilise them. I don't know. I just think, like, I would want to meet somebody based on them meeting me for who I am today and who I turn up as, not for perception, which is created online.
See,
so that's like my own...
I agree with you. My argument is, because I've heard that before.
Yeah.
My argument is, what's stopping someone from doing that if they meet you in a bar somewhere or in a restaurant?
Yeah.
Like you can't potentially work out if someone likes you for you.
Yes.
Until you actually spend time with them. And I don't think the change of environment can define whether or not that's going to happen.
Yes.
Do you see what I'm saying?
True.
I just think if you're meeting someone in person or meeting someone on a dating app, I think the key is to just give yourself time and be patient with it.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us, and I'm, you know, I do this as well. I think a lot of us go, when we're single and we're looking for something, you put pressure on yourself.
Yes.
Because you're trying to find, and especially like with you and me, in everything that we do, we are focused. Like, whether it's your sport,
laser beam,
whether it's your podcast, whether it's my radio show, like, we're like, right, we're doing this now.
Yeah.
And I feel like because we've got that mentality, it kind of filters through into our dating life. Like, you're like, right, I need to find this person. I don't want no nonsense. I'm going to only spend my time with this person because of my time is so important to me. But actually, you just have to just chill and go with the flow because I don't think you can control love.
No, I would agree. Love comes in all different shapes and sizes and formats too.
Yeah.
We just got to be open.
Yeah, like a nice short size is my favourite size.
Where were we? We were talking about Charlie.
Yes.
Charlie's the newer addition to the crew.
Well, she doesn't feel new. She feels like she's been there from the start. So me and Ritz met at uni.
Yeah.
And then we did One Extra together, then got to Kiss. And Charlie was already on Kiss. So she was like working with people like Bam Bam and Street Boy and stuff like that. And so she was very much kind of like a big part of Kiss already. And so then when the Breakfast show host left, because there was another guy called Robin Banks, and he left as well, then they kind of put us all together. She's slightly newer than Ricky in terms of us coming together, but we've been together for so long, it doesn't feel that way.
It's a serious unit.
Yeah.
A band I'd like to be part of.
You're always welcome to be part of our band.
I think I'm going to invite myself
to be
part of the band.
Always room for you. We'll make room for you.
Let's all go skiing and snowboarding.
So can you make that happen?
I think between all of us, we could really make it happen because music and mountains is a good mix.
Listen, I used to do snowbombing festival.
What were we jamming to in the Alps?
Are
you going to be like setting the playlist up?
I've got pure tunes for you. Don't worry about that. I'm more of like a hip hop guy and I love like my R&B.
Okay.
Like especially like 90s. Like I'm obsessed with 90s R&B.
I was born in the 90s.
That's hilarious for you to say. So hang on, wait. So when I say 90s R&B, what do you have a tune in mind that you liked?
I actually really like 90s music because for me, it's...
How would you remember if you was born in the 90s?
Because I remember going in the car to school with my mum in the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah.
And like her having the tunes on and vibing. So now when I'm listening to Smooth Radio and they're throwing out all the classics, I know the words to all of the songs.
All right. So hang on, wait. So, okay. Do you know A. Marie? Just one thing.
Wait. Let's get it on. Let's get it on. Because your translation.
Yeah, but my version wasn't helping you.
Oh yeah. I know this. Yeah.
Tune. That's produced by Rich Harrison. Like the drums are crazy. So he's done stuff for like Beyonce and stuff like that. Bad Boy producer. Can't beat tunes like this. On the vocals. So I'm saying you're already vibing. And you was born.
Okay, so we've got that going on.
Yeah.
Has music always been a big part of your life?
Massive part. Like, if you come to my house, I would say in like 85% of the rooms, there's some gadget where you can play music. Even in like my bathroom, there'll be like a speaker there, which I've got like Bluetooth, like a mini gym in the garden. There's like Sonos player in there. Everywhere there's music. If I go to the gym, I do not have my headphones. I'm vexed. I'm screwing. I have to. It makes me feel good. It makes me feel happy to hear music.
Right, run me through the routine then.
What? Okay. For getting up?
For everything. A day in the life of Melvin. The different tunes, the soundtracks played along the way. In the moments you're feeling low or the moments you're struggling. The moments you don't want to get up. What are we vibing to?
It's really weird. Like, if I'm feeling low,
yeah,
I quite like emotive kind of like soul music.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so like...
Do you sing along or are you just like bop into it?
A bit of both. Like, so one of my favourite artists is a guy called Maxwell.
Yeah?
He's like, he used to have like this big afro. He's cut it down now. And his vocals, he did a cover version of Kate Bush's A Woman's Work a few years ago. His voice is incredible.
Yeah.
And Kate Bush is a G, but I would say his version is on par. And so he's got like a tune called Pretty Wings. It's like this just beautiful love song. So people like that. I love Erykah Badu. Just really emotional, like old school Luther Vandross. Anything that makes you feel like you're connected to the music, you can't beat that if you're feeling low. But if I'm in like a happy, good mood, I love my hip hop music.
Yeah.
I love hip hop all day long. Everything from Jay-Z to Drake to Slum Village. I'm really into what they call conscious hip hop. There's a rapper called Common.
Yeah.
Who's massive in the States, and we were lucky enough to meet him here as well. He's like one of my favorite rappers of all time, just because he raps like it's poetry and his flow's just so smooth. He's just very, very smooth with it. If you can just imagine like the coolest person you can think of rapping on a beat, like Common is one of my top guys.
When it comes to your 90s tunes,
yeah,
growing up in London, Ghanaian influence,
yeah,
have you got any of that going on?
Yeah,
has your mum brought you up?
We grew up listening to everything. So traditional Ghanaian music is called highlife.
Okay.
And it's so beautiful now, because when you listen to what's called Afrobeat now, you can hear some of the elements of that in modern music now. There's stuff that's charting from Wizkid, stuff that's charting from like Burna Boy. That all comes from like traditional West African like music. And it's funny, because growing up I would hear these beats and these sounds all the time. So for me to hear it, I'm playing stuff on the radio on our show. And so yeah, for me it's just a really lovely thing to see. So like now, like I'll have uncles who like they DJ, and they're not just playing music that they like, they're playing music that we love as well. It's all kind of like just one sound.
So like a merger.
It's crazy how big like music from Africa has become.
Would you say that's something that's happened of late, or did you grow up with that trajectory?
In the last few years, I think it's always been massive in Africa.
Yeah.
But like I said, you can look at the UK charts now, the American charts now, and there's some kind of influence from Africa. Even South African music is making a lot, like massive waves now. You've got like Tyler, you know, her tune with Water. I think this is like her first album and she's absolutely blowing up. You just wouldn't have seen that before. Like if I was to say 20 years ago, you tell me like three massive African artists, you'd struggle. Now I can tell you 10. For me, it's just such a big deal and it's a beautiful thing to see. And I can't wait to go. I haven't been to Ghana in such a long time. And I can't wait to go to Ghana and see kind of like the influence of...
There's something in that, I reckon.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
The influences of the world.
Well, everyone goes to Ghana around Christmas. I've got friends there who are out there at the moment now working and just on holiday. And it just looks like so much fun. I think it's just a beautiful thing and it really makes me happy.
That's freaking mega. I want to spend some time with you getting to know music better, because I reckon I must be... probably the most unrhythmic person
really?
You've ever met.
Yeah. Can you not dance?
I can dance my own style.
Right.
So if we're like in a club and the music's popping, I can move, but I can't move to a format that somebody else has constructed.
Right, right, right.
So I'm free flowing.
Well,
so you know, like little break dance, little loose, I'm good. I can shake. But
I think dancing is expression. I think as long as you've got rhythm, it doesn't matter about... I actually think that's less dance when it's a specific format. And I think that's a different side of dance altogether. But I think as long as you feel the music, that's the main thing.
Would you say you can dance?
I think I can shake a leg, yeah.
Yeah.
I can shake a leg. I hope so.
You're one of the few broadcasters that has managed to tick the boxes of both TV and radio.
Yeah.
They often say, so that famous expression, he's got a face for radio, not TV.
Yeah.
You have plowed straight through that box. Talk to me a bit about the recent TV series you've just had out.
Right, so recently we had a show called Celebrity Cooking School on E4, or Celeb Cooking School. And essentially it's a cooking show for celebs that can't cook.
When you say can't cook, what are we talking
about? Like, I'm talking like
really
they will burn broccoli in boiling water, that kind of like can't cook.
That's quite devastating, actually. You'd be a bit upset if you couldn't cook some broccoli. Like, that's a staple of my diet. Yeah.
The thing is, I think everyone on the show loves food, but some people might have partners who cook for them, or they may be in situations where they're constantly on the go, so they might just get takeaways and stuff like that. So yeah. There are a lot of people out there that can't cook, which is why it's kind of like a format that works. But luckily, we've got this amazing chef called Giorgio Locatelli, who is a Michelin-starred chef. He has restaurants all around the world, and he's taken on the task to teach these guys how to cook in a number of days. I always like to describe the show as the naughty cooking show,
yeah,
because we don't take ourselves too seriously. And it's like, you know, like on other shows, like people bring up their food and everyone's very serious and very straight and they look scared. I think everyone wants to do well because they're competitive, but like you can see the other students laughing and stuff. It's a bit of a vibe. And it's a bit more like, it is literally like a class, which is why we call it the Celeb Cooking School. It's more like just a classroom of people, a classroom of celebrities, I should say. It's a fun show. This is the second series. I'm really proud of stuff like that because I don't think TV's an easy thing to do. I always feel like radio is like my bread and butter, like, because, and I'm quite lucky because I've got Ricky and Charlie there, so I just have to turn up. Whereas I feel like TV, it can be quite hard because there's a lot.
Needs a little more prep.
Yeah,
sometimes.
More prep, and you need to remember more things, and there's so many elements to it.
So you've hosted a fair amount of shows, but you've also dabbled in the reality side of work.
Oh yeah.
You have done Strictly.
Yeah.
And the one that really stands out to me, which is very ballsy of you,
right,
quite literally,
oh,
was Celebrity Save Our Sperm.
Yeah.
Now, from a health perspective, that must have been a real eye-opener. And to go public with something so private as well, that's tough.
I mean, it's kind of weird because when they first approached me, Channel 4 and the production company, I kind of like was like, okay, this is interesting, because I was like, well, why have you asked me to be part of it? And they kind of explained how there was such a decline in male fertility over the years. And essentially they were like, Mel, we want you to be a guinea pig. And then I was like, okay, that seems interesting. And then I was like, it is a very, very private thing to talk about.
It's so private.
And I actually asked my mom and my sister for permission first, because
that's
I didn't want them to be uncomfortable about me talking about stuff like that. And my sister was the one who was like, actually, this could help a lot of people. It can inform you on, you know, stuff that you might need to do in the future or even now. And so when I kind of looked at it from that perspective, I was like, okay. And so we did the show, and obviously Russell and Ollie were incredible. And Ollie at the time was trying to do IVF for his baby, and now he's had twins.
Ollie's been on this podcast before he had twins.
Before the twins?
Yeah.
So you already know, do you mean, like, the journey that those guys went through. So it was an amazing show to do. And I think for me personally, when it went out, and to be honest, last week I got a message, you know.
Wow.
Last week I had a message from a guy. And it always happens on my DM. Like, I get a DM from someone I don't know, who I don't follow. They might not even follow me. And they'll just go, I watched the doc. Can I ask you how you did this, this, and this?
Right.
And they'll message me, and then I'll try and give them as much information as I can or point them in the right direction, and then I just don't hear from them again. It's mad because it means there's a lot of couples out there, a lot of men out there that need this information, and it's not there.
Yeah.
Because I'm just the radio DJ. Do you know what I mean?
Isn't that crazy, the impact that you can have by doing something like that?
Well, the impact of, you know, that was a team effort because we went to so many amazing specialist. We had a nutrition expert called Mel, and then we went to like one of the best fertility doctors in the world, a guy called Dr. Ramsey.
What was your biggest takeaway in health from that journey with the show?
It's terrifying because there's just so much that's not great for us. And this, I've considered myself to be quite healthy until I did that show. But little things like, do you drink bottled water?
Yeah.
It's not great for us.
Because of the plastic.
Yeah. So you already knew that before I even said anything.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But there's so many different things that affect a male's fertility. So if it's affecting your fertility, and sperm's tiny, if it's affecting your sperm, then what else is this doing to you? Like, I eat sweets all day long. I had one of the biggest issues when it came to sweets on the show, on the documentary, where it was like, I was like, I don't drink, I don't really smoke, I don't do drugs. I was like, I'm a healthy guy. But there's so much other stuff that comes into play. Like, I love a hot tub. I love a hot tub. Yeah. I love heated seats in my car. Look at me now, like I'm always covered up. But the reason why a man's testicles are outside is because they need to stay cool. And so if you're sitting in hot tubs or if you're having heated seats, yes, you're basically like destroying your sperm. And it's not just
so sauna as well.
Saunas are bad. Like, so when I did that, I couldn't do any of that.
That's so wild.
But people don't know.
No.
And I didn't know until we did it. It was quite interesting, Doc.
Has it given you a new awareness and understanding of your own health?
Yeah.
Has it changed your routine in any way?
I mean, water's a really tough one because if you go to shops, because essentially you should be buying bottled water in glass.
In glass, right?
Yeah. And it's...
And if you do that, you are just going to get stereotyped as a posh wanker.
Exactly. You are the wanker. It's more expensive.
I'd like the bottles in the glass.
The thing is, Ace,
when you're on radio and you go to the runner, oh, can you get me some water?
Only the glass. Yeah. And this is the thing.
Who's this Melvin guy? What a dick. He's ordering water in a glass.
It's hard to be healthy in this day and age. Like, it's not cheap to be healthy.
It's really not, is it?
Because even if you like... Because essentially people will like just drink water from a tap, but it still should be filtered. There's so many different things that you have to worry
about. But it's probably not filtered.
No. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So yeah, but it has taught me a lot. And you know, when I am ready to sit down and have some children, I hope that I've got all the tools in place to make that happen. Do you know what I mean? And all the information. There's a lot going on in the world that we're completely unaware of. Like even the way we package our food, all of our food's packaged in plastic. When we did this doc, our nutritionist said that we consume a credit card of plastic a week. So in your belly right now is a credit card of plastic.
You know what's so crazy?
Go on.
We've recently spoken to a guest who is a weather forecaster. And she mentioned the exact same fact.
The same fact?
Yeah, about the credit card of plastic.
But so, when you think of that, imagine if I said to you now, Ames, I've got this credit card, could you just eat it for me? You'd be like, what are you talking about, mother? That's the weirdest thing to do. No, but that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
Every week.
Without even intentionally putting it in our mouths. No good. Don't swallow the sweet wrapper, kid.
Yeah, yeah.
What's this little sweet obsession that you mentioned as
I just have the sweetest tooth. Like, and I try my hardest. Like, I've recently tried to clear all my cupboards. But like, after a meal, for me, there's nothing better than having a tasty little cake. And now because if you've got like Deliveroo and all this stuff, I'll be sitting in front of the TV and I'm like, oh, let me just get a little quick dessert. Yeah. Like, I will pay stupid money for just a slice of cake. It's my one vice.
What kind of cake though?
Oh,
God.
Anything.
Like, I'm saying, you have what you want, Belv. I'm gonna.
For real?
Right now, yeah.
Like a high quality apple pie.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not talking about that rubbish stuff. Okay. I'm talking about the pastry is, you know, crispy.
Okay.
And delish, like high end with a bit of ice cream or some custard.
What do you reckon I'm going for?
I feel like you're a crumble person.
I'm going banoffee pie.
Oh my God, you went there. I had a bad banoffee yesterday. A bad boy banoffee.
So, to everybody listening to this podcast on mindset, motivation and resilience, the one takeaway I have is I think it's okay to treat yourself now and again.
Yeah, I think it's good. You got to live your life.
Just maybe not every day.
Yeah, don't eat cakes like for breakfast, but I think you should enjoy it. And we work hard. I think if you work hard, then you have to enjoy it.
I think there's a real balance with work hard, play hard. Mm. How do you manage your work, personal life balance with that? Or because you're working with your mates, does it?
Do you know what's really weird is I think my work is quite sociable anyway.
Yeah.
So when I don't have to work, all I do is chill. My spare time is spent like in the gym or like I love just a good film. Like I'll go to the cinema by myself sometimes. I love a good film.
That's a real judge of character, being able to go to the cinema on your own.
I'm on holiday by myself. I've been in New York by myself.
I've been to New York by myself on my own as well, actually.
Yeah, because I don't think you should wait for people to do stuff that you want to do.
No, you should just go and do it.
But certain holidays, I think you need to be around people.
Yeah.
Certain places in the world, you should be around people. But
for safety as well.
Yeah.
Safety in numbers, depending on where you're going.
Exactly.
If we're going off the beaten track.
Yeah. But yeah, generally, I don't mind my own company. At the same time.
I guess you're right, though, in that you do have a very, very social job. I think that helps. And I think that's the crazy thing now with a lot of people working from home. They don't actually have that contact time.
Yeah. But
like I said, I'm so lucky because our work is sociable and then I'm doing it with my mates. And then like, I'll make an effort to see like my sister and her kids. And then I've got really cool friends who make a lot of time for me. Like I'll be with my boy Josiah one day, my boy Eddie's another day. They're always around me. Cause like I said, my friends are my family.
It's so also the energy you give off though, right?
Yeah.
It's attractive. And if you're a positive person.
Yeah, then it attracts positivity. Yeah, you're right. You're right. But I think everything is balanced.
I think it is.
It's great to have loads of people around you, but I think it's also great to be comfortable in your own skin with yourself. And I think it's great to chill some days. And I think it's great to go out and party other days. I think everything is
balance. It's balance, isn't it?
Yeah.
Balance with the sweets, balance with the party.
That's what I don't have balance with, is the sweets. It's just all sweets.
All sweets. So you're not burning broccoli at home then?
No broccoli.
Just those, the carrot shaped sweets.
Oh my God, oh, delicious as well.
What's your relationship like with Monday, the start of the week?
Mondays?
Yeah.
Can't wait to get them out of the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because I just think like I love a weekend. Yeah. So it's like it's the kind of like the stamp at the end of the weekend. I think with me, like it's getting up, which is the hard part. Once I'm at work, then I'm fine.
Yeah.
But it's just getting up.
So not a morning person.
Which is mad because we did a breakfast show for so long. But I don't think I am a morning person, no.
What's your key to powering through a morning?
Hurry up and get out of bed.
Yeah, rock straight out. One of those.
But I do press the snooze button at least once.
Do you?
Yeah, I'm really bad for that.
See, I'm not a snoozer.
I can tell you're not a snoozer.
No, I do like a cheeky lie-in occasionally.
Occasionally,
after a really solid week of exhausting myself.
Yeah.
But then literally, say this is the edge of the bed, it's like the alarm goes and it's like a...
It's a throw.
If I have to get up, for me, the hardest part of getting out of bed is the physical doing of it. So if I just throw myself out, it's done.
That's the way you're supposed to do it. It's actually better for you.
Is it?
Yeah. It's actually really bad if you just keep pressing snooze. It's really bad for you.
There you go. That's a brilliant fact. I didn't know that.
So you're doing the right thing.
Okay, good.
I think Charlie does that as well. She'll just get up straight away as soon as her alarm goes. She's just up. But like...
I think it's the addiction to coffee that helps with that. I'm like...
Oh, really?
Yeah, go.
Are you like, it has to be... a really good brand of coffee as well.
No.
Just anything.
Not anything. It just has to be made with love if I'm making it at home. You know, like it's just got to be, and the right milk is key.
Correct.
You know, I'm one of those.
Why not drink coffee though?
You know, why you can't get up, and that's why you're pressing snooze. You've got nothing to look forward to.
I'm a mint tea drinker.
Yeah, disappointing.
Yeah, that's upset.
Probably a lot healthier for you. But
that's upset you, hasn't it?
Yeah. You're not who I thought you were. Do you have any life mottos or quotes that you live by that you can share with our listeners to help them attack the start of the week?
My favourite one was actually, I think it was given to me by Dermot O'Leary, because we asked him about a show that he used to host called the NTAs. And I was like, do you ever get nervous? And he was like, if I'm unprepared, then I'm nervous. But if I'm unprepared, then I'm excited. So I think my saying is always, failure to prepare is preparation for failure, is my favorite saying.
Strong.
So yeah, I always like to be prepared for stuff and then I can enjoy it and just be myself. If I don't know what's going on, it really makes me feel quite anxious.
Yeah.
I hate that feeling of not knowing what's going on.
So put the work in
to
reap the rewards and enjoy the process.
Yeah, I just think if you're organised, then you can just enjoy.
Are you an organised person in general?
To a point, yeah. I think with my work I am, but...
You kind of have to be.
With everything else, I'm not that organised.
We're nearing the end of our 1 mile stroll.
Oh, mate. How do you know it's the end? How do you keep track of it?
This will probably be like the 102nd one of these.
So you can just tell...
No, we don't actually have a fixed thing, but we do normally about 40 minutes.
Oh, smashed it.
And that's 39 minutes and 56 seconds.
That's good knowledge.
It is. It's just a feeling. Tell.
Yeah.
It's a feeling.
It's just a feeling.
It's a feeling in my legs.
When you put it out, is there like a timer or like a thing like tallying up the distance?
No. No time, no distance. But what we do encourage our listeners to do... is to tune in and walk with us.
That's a great idea. How did you come up with this idea?
Well, you know, just...
Genius.
No, the actual reason is when lockdown started, a lot of our conversations were moved to Zoom and I didn't want to be stuck stationary. And I was finding that my diary was becoming filled with appointments on a computer. And the one thing we could do was go outside and walk and talk. So I thought, let's take the conversation outside.
That's clever.
And here we are. And
you said you've done 100 of these.
Yeah, over 100.
Really?
But my question is, to wrap, how do you commute coming into London every day? Do you walk much?
I walk from my house to the overhead station, and then I change, and then I take the underground, and then walk from Oxford Circus to Radio One.
Do you ever think, hey, I'm going to get off a stop early to walk a little bit more?
Yes, but it will be usually to do something else. So like if I get off a stop early at like Warren Street, it might be because I want to get a cake from a cake shop nearby.
Doesn't matter. There's still steps there,
yeah,
right?
There's still extra steps. Or if there's a strike, sometimes I'll have to come from King's Cross to here.
So that's a serious walk.
Yeah, that's a bad boy walk. But yeah, I might, if I can find a line bike on the way, then I sometimes do that, but yeah.
So the intention is to encourage our listeners to get off that one or two stops early, to plug in.
Okay, yeah, walk, then do that. Talk, get off now, guys.
Get off now. Get off now. Monday Mile listeners, I really hope you enjoyed that one. Love the energy. Love being kept warm. Melvin,
I thought I didn't do a good job of keeping you warm.
You kept me very warm for the first 20 minutes by me attacking your arm. And then I let you go.
I didn't want
to cling on to you for the whole episode.
I'm always happy to help.
Monday Mile listeners, it is a wrap. You know what to do. Make sure you subscribe, and we will see you every single Monday morning. Anything else you'd like to say, Melvin?
Laters, bye. Get off. Next stop.
Get off early. It's a wrap.